Well, like they say, we've saved the best wine for last. And the way I understand it, Father, that the first miracle that Christ ever did was changing water into wine.
That's right.
And so maybe he's got a special place in his heart for the helpless alcoholic. And I certainly was helpless when I got here. And I just feel great being up here with Bill and I used to bend a few elbows a while, and this is like Killer's Row. And there was Patrick, the behemoth, and Charles was about six sizes bigger. He was a big bear himself, and he wasn't Father Charles then, but Father Red here seemed like he's his Father Red ever since I knew him. And he's seen me drinking. He's seen all of us drinking. And I remember stuff you said at your Thursday night meeting rings in my mind yet. And I'm not going to take any more of his time. I'm going to give you a Father Ed from Joliet, Illinois, who's got the longest running one-man show, I believe, in AA history in that area. I think you've been doing that for over 20 years now, ain't you, Father?
Yeah.
So I give you a Father Ed L.
I am Father Ed Langdon of Lockport, Illinois. I really am not from Joliet. I work in my meetings at Joliet. And I am an alcoholic. We give thanks to the Lord in the name of Patrick and Mike, Pat and Mike, in the name of all of us. As Tony said, I think we do have a special thanks to the Lord, because he had a lot of love for fools and drunks, and when you combine the both of them, you have a lot of mercy that the Lord showed us. You will have to blame Patrick somewhat for my being here. He invited me to speak. He claims I am his sponsor, but he hasn't asked me anything in 15 years. We could well say he's told you what to do in the last 15, and he has done a good job. We could say, Lord, it is good for us to be here to give thanks, that we might better share our experience, hope, and strength with one another. I'm going to go clear back to the beginning, though, in this case. It so happens that I had not... Patrick was... And you'll excuse me, Mike, if I don't give your background, because I really don't know it. But I do know Patrick somewhat. He was born in my hometown of Streeter, Illinois, which is about 60 miles southwest of Joliet, on July the 25th, 1938. He was a big baby, as you might imagine. A little chubby, rosy-cheeked fellow. And he had a skin rash. He had eczema. And he still has a tender skin today, as Diane, his good wife, will tell you. But he has weathered the storm well. My earliest recollection that goes back some 41 or 2 years was one of my few jobs ever that I did as a babysitter, and that was for Patrick. I don't remember much about it. He slept most of the time, and by the time his folks came home, I was asleep also. Our association over his young and tender years were very limited. I had my first parish from 48 to 57, and that was when he was only 10 years old. But it didn't take long past 10 that he did start getting into trouble, and good news, spreads fast, and family news spreads, and he was known to have gotten into a little trouble in the early 50s. He got a driver's license rather early. I don't know whether it was too early or not. But he, in all his wisdom, he used to make a trip. And I was about 60 miles away. And he would come down with a couple of friends of his. I'd give them a beer. And then they would get some gas and head back the 60 miles to Joliet. You know, that wasn't too smart, but it proves that you'd go any distance sometime, even at a tender age, to get a drink. Especially get some gas, too. At 55, in 1955, my father died. He didn't seem, he saw my drinking off and on, but I'm not going to take the blame for his being an alcoholic. That might have been a family trait, I don't know. But he did notice, especially around my father's, after my father's funeral, he did notice my excessive drinking quite a bit. In a short time, he joined the army, and this part of his life I don't know much about. I do know from what he has said that he bloomed and blossomed into a beautiful drinker in the service. Towards the last part of his service, he went to Greenland, and he was in the ice pack business up there. Whatever that was, they had a project. What was it?
I don't know.
Yeah. The only thing I know about this time was he worked in the PX, and he had access to considerable amounts of antifreeze. And he used it very, very well. The only story that I know of this part of his drinking was that he got some pugilistic ideas of his superiority, especially over a particular man of a Russian background who happened to be about 6'8" and was of considerable size. Now, Patrick was considerable size also. He weighed about 260, but as you see, he was not anywhere near 6'8". So, Patrick, in his cups one night, decided, I hate this bastard, and I'm going to get even with him. So, while the poor Russian was lying in bed, Patrick leaped on him, and the result was rather fatal. It happened on the outside rather than on the inside. The Russian took him out and beat the living crap out of Patrick. And I don't know whether he carries it still today. He carried for many years a picture in his billfold of his beautiful face after he had been beaten so tenderly by this Russian. He still got it. Little gimmicks we keep, and that's a good one to keep, you know. My drinking came to a close in February of 1958 when I went to Gestalt Sanitarium in Michigan. I came home from there after a 3-month stint in May of 58. Patrick got out of the Army in August of 58. And I had been sober some 7 or 8 months. Now, his understanding of AA, he gleaned in Greenland from his mother, my sister, who told him I had gone away from my drinking. But his understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous was that we gathered once a month, had a big party, drank all we wanted, and then we left it alone the rest of the month. Now, that was his initial introduction or understanding of AA. When he came home, he noticed that I was sober and his mouth dropped open and he couldn't quite understand what the hell this sobriety was all about. I took a rather gentle approach to him. I gave him a big book, and I'm sure he read it. I'm sure he didn't understand it quite well, but he did. The seed was planted, and he began a slow process, even at his tender age, of grasping the program. I had started in November of 59, I started a beginner's meeting. The gentlemen to my left, Tony and Bill and Patrick, came through this meeting. And I take no credit for their sobriety, but we did teach them some basic principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Father Charles gained entrance much later. Tom, the third brother, was a little ahead of Father Charles, but there are three brothers on the program, and Uncle Ed, and then Pat, my sister Ruth, and Pat, about the last 4 or 5 years, even though they didn't go to AA, they chopped off their drinking, so you can say that this is a family illness, it's a family disease, and the example of three sons convinced the parents that it was a hopeless, losing battle. I like to mention this last one before I go into the personalities. One time in this, I got my first parish back after the service, or after my service at Guest House. In June of 59, I went to Manuka. And sometime in the fall or the spring, I think it was, of 1960, about on a Sunday morning, about 5 o'clock, I had two distinguished visitors who had come up from the South, Tony and Pat. At 5 o'clock in the morning, on a Sunday morning, knocking on my door. They can't remember this, maybe, but I do. And all they wanted was a beer, and I gave them a beer, and it was just, the light was just beginning to dawn, and I wasn't about to drive them home. I don't know whether they were going to drive themselves home, I guess, and they did, that's about the last of the great stories, and I'll tell you that's about the only ones I really know. They can fill you in on the details, I'm sure they have. This is a matter of life and death. Sobriety is, to us, I believe, a precious gift. As you see a crowd like this, or we isolate Pat and Mike. Nevertheless, we see combined sobriety here tonight, and it's beautiful to see. Some of us came a long way, not to honor just one person or two people, but to honor a living miracle of God working through Alcoholics Anonymous. A beautiful, wonderful program. As we look at you and we see happy faces, we see only really the surface. But we know and we see belief beneath that, the desire and dedication, in contrast to the desperation of only a few months or a short time ago. We must be forever a grateful people. My friends, we do live on borrowed time. We are told that, and I think sometimes, many times, we forget it. We are living on borrowed time, so we must use it well. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry these principles in all our affairs. That is a big order. The big book tells us. I can't go through with it. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our best advertisement is to live soberly. We will spread that message to all who know and see us day by day. We must share or we will surely lose and die. I sincerely think that sobriety is exciting and wonderful, and I beg all of you to give it a fair chance. I will say this about Patrick Wheeler, Jr. Not because he's my nephew, but because I think he has demonstrated almost as far as the alcoholics I have known a dedication, a commitment to suffering alcoholics as well as anybody I have ever seen. You Southerners, I'm sure, are looking, you know, you're looking at a Yankee preacher here tonight, and you probably expect a lot more fire and brimstone, and you better fasten your seat belts because here it comes. I run a beginner's meeting in Joliet. These gentlemen know that. I hope that I still am a student, however. There are no diplomas or graduations in this program. Wheeler doesn't graduate tonight. We won't let him. The bulk of my 20 years in running that meeting has been spent on the first step. I am powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. That is the first basic step in recovery. I need help. When I make that admission, I am I'm halfway home. The first basic step in recovery, I need help. What is an alcoholic? One who should not drink but does so anyway. That's a good definition. One who cannot drink safely under any circumstance. One who cannot predict their actions after one drink. One who is never satisfied with one drink but always persists in having more to intoxication. Dr. Bob called it an awful thirst, an awful craving. I suppose the most common term we use today is addiction. One more definition I like that was given by an old man who said, "I never felt quite right when I was sober. I never felt quite right when I was sober." In those few words, I believe, I describe the loneliness, the hurt, the anxiety, the fear, frustration, and all the emotions of the alcoholic. To repeat what you have always heard, alcoholism is a symptom of our underlying emotional problem and disturbance. I like to say it in common terms, an alcoholic is one whose guts are in turmoil. We live in an atomic age. You can put it in atomic terms. And the alcoholic is an individual atomic bomb. You never know when he's going to blow up. You never know when he's going to drink unless he gets his sobriety in a safe and sound way. To solve our problem, we must put the cork in the bottle, go to work on ourselves, go to meetings, pray, and hang on. We have learned, I think, pretty well to cope on a daily basis with our trials and temptations in daily life through the helping hand of God and our fellow AAs.
The most important words that you and I have learned are, Lord, I can't do it alone. And I could say to myself, why did it take me so long to learn that half the battle is won when I say, Lord, please help me. We can do together what I can't do alone. Again, I commend you who are here for your valiant effort to stay sober. Some of you are fighting a bitter fight, a real struggle to stay sober. I know that. It's difficult a day at a time or an hour at a time. Some have more trouble than others. Why, we don't know. I must not look down my nose or point my finger at you and say, well, they just don't want it. That's not true. Just not true. Whether I have a day of sobriety or 20 years of sobriety, there are some who are still suffering who want it as badly as I do, and yet they can't make it. We don't know why. They are ill. Illnesses have degrees. The nature of the illness is simply a human illness, and various persons show various degrees of the illness. Alcoholism is no exception. Do not lose patience with the alcoholic. People kept faith in us long years beyond which they should have. There are some real deeds that we went through, from desperation to desire to decision to determination and finally to dedication. The five D's. Desperation, desire, decision, determination, and dedication. We must always watch for the little foxes that gnaw at the mind. What are those little foxes? Boasting, self-pride, self-gratification, rigidity. I always know best. The little foxes that gnaw at the vines. I stole that from my retreat master. There are also spiritual termites. And some of you people, you know what foxes are. And I'm sure that some of you down here know what little termites are. They're like little ants that destroy your foundation. They eat wood. Guilt, hostility, hate, self-pity are all spiritual termites. Take care of the alcoholic first so that the alcoholic may be of maximum use to God, to his fellow human being. It is not always easy. We have to get down on our knees sometimes and examine. There's no such thing as a part-time member of AA, just as there is no such thing as partial pregnancy. There is no such thing as a partial AA member. You are either sober, 100%, or you're not. It's not easy. The obsession of drink is a terrible disease. So I started out by saying, it's a matter of life and death, and I will do everything possible to avoid one drink today. That's all I must avoid, is that one first drink. You heard about the guy, and it's an old one, who went into the bar and ordered 10 drinks. The bartender lined him up in the bar, and then started out, and the fella took the second
drink, he didn't take the first one. And the bartender said, "What's the matter with that first one?" He said, "Oh, I'm on AA. That's the one that gets you in trouble." That is an old one, I know, but it still fits. It still works. Surrender to win. Suffer to get wealth. Share in order to keep. Die in order to live. It's a beautiful program, and I say Patrick has done a good job in these years. The only damper I would put on our joy in celebrating and in thanks, of course, is don't be complacent. Don't sit on your fanny and say, "Well, I made it. Let them sweat it out like I did. After all I did for her, she went out and got drowned." They didn't hurt. She didn't hurt you. Or he didn't hurt you. They hurt only themselves. Remember that motto and slogan that was formed at the 30th anniversary celebration in 1960. Pat and Tony made a flying trip to Canada and into Toronto, and they were there when this was formed. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. It doesn't say you are and I'm not. It doesn't say I am and you are not. It says that both of us, all of us, each of us, is responsible to the suffering alcoholic when they ask for help. Most of you have heard the story of the Good Shepherd and the little lamb that was lost. It's a beautiful story, I think, of the alcoholic. It lends itself to a beautiful comparison. I'm sure you know the story as well as I do. The highlights of it I will mention. The shepherd was watching his sheep, and as he was watching them, one little lamb wandered off and got lost. The shepherd went after that little lost one. You've even seen the picture of Christ carrying the little lamb back to the fold. That's the story of every alcoholic. We get caught in the briars of life, lost in the valleys, hidden in the alleys of life. We begin to drown in self-pity and booze. You know that truthfully, some alcoholics choke to death on their own vomit. That is an insert, but nevertheless, it's true. It is true. We are the fortunate ones. We wander off from family, from God, from friends, from jobs, from home, aimlessly going on our way to certain death, just like that little lost sheep, until the loving hand of Alcoholics Anonymous reaches out to us with a friendly man or woman. That AA hand leads us to another unseen but sure hand of our real shepherd, he who is awaiting us and says, "Come, I will give you rest and peace." We hesitate. We are unsure. We don't trust people. We don't trust even God. But we finally realize that the Lord's way is the only way. We trusted only ourselves, and even then we didn't trust ourselves. What a joy it is to come back to Him who is the way, the truth, and the life. "Come to me, and I will give you rest and peace." He who is the shepherd of our souls and our lives. I had the master, I think one of, as a teacher in my years at Guest House, as Bill Wilson is gone, they knew one another. I saw Bill Wilson from a distance one time. I can see the picture of him yet. I never talked to him. But there, in a talk that was given that Patrick heard many about 18, 19 years ago in Dwight, Illinois, he said these words, and this is what our service is today. We have learned that the highest office under heaven is service to the lowly. We have learned an entirely new concept of service. We have learned service is a duty only when he who serves only him whom he must. But it is elevated to the rank of privilege when he who serves all whom he can. Now we are under no fiat in AA to understand our brother. No. We are under no obligation to understand our brother, but we are under orders to help him. And that is divine command. And who among us would have the arrogance to disobey? There is no command to greatness in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are all equal. There is only invitation to service. There are no small men in the arena of service, and there are no great men outside of its circle, for all greatness is planted in service. And all service grows into greatness. And the essence of greatness and the genius of service is the twin virtue of humility and gratitude. I would like to continue the last paragraph of Austin Ripley. Patrick knows this pretty much by heart, but it's a beautiful expression. And I think we can use it tonight very well. I feel very sure, as God parts the curtain of heaven this evening and looks down on this wonderful meeting, surely there must be a smile on his face as he turns to his divine son, whose hand is raised in blessing. Perhaps if we listen, we can catch the gentle words of his admonition. Light another's candle from the flame of your redemption. It will not dim the brilliance of your torch, but will add its illumination to the path of one who now stumbles through the blackness of despair. And remember that it was I, your God, who fired the flare by whose beam you found your way back to life. So light your brother's candle of hope from the flame of compassion, which must burn steadily in the sanctuary of every true AA heart. We are here to give thanks, and I think there's no greater thanks that we can give. Third, first, to God Almighty, to all of you, for your wonderful work in AA. I don't do enough, you don't do enough, none of us does enough. In your life, as in mine, we have come from despair to hope, from fear to death. So now have faith. Go to meetings, pray, hang on. You try to make it very complicated. Go to meeting, have faith, pray, hang on. That's all there is. I send you from here today with a command as the Master gave it. A new command of love I give to you, that you have love one for another. From here we go in thanks. Patrick, you and I, and we shall fade away like I'm fading away, the old bear, you know, The message must go on. And all of us will go on as far as we can with that message to carry the message to the suffering alcoholic must continue. The Lord bless you and keep you. And again, we give thanks in the name of the Lord for such men as Patrick and Mike. God bless you all.
Upside down when you get going into power greater than himself and a god. Because he sure must have turned Pat upside down to make something attractive for me out of him. But I know my world was turned upside down enough that what he had was attractive. He had an ability to tell it like it was and say it like it was and hit me between the eyes and fence me in when I would try to crawl off somewhere and run down the alleys again. And he kept me on the street and out there among them. And many times I wanted to run away. I can remember in my first few 24 hours of sobriety, getting a phone call and saying, "How the hell was it today, kid?" You know, and I'd say, "It wasn't too good. They didn't like me too good." And he'd say, "Well, you need to make another meeting." I said, "But I don't think my life's unmanageable." I said, "Maybe power was over alcohol, but I still got my wife and kids in the car in the garage." And he says, "Well, you weren't saying that a week ago or 3 weeks ago when you just got out of jail." And it reminded me of a lot of things I was trying to forget about, you know, because I was getting better. And I was a periodic when I got here. And I got better real quick a lot of times, and I forgot. He didn't let me forget, and it hurt. And he had the courage. He was still a bully. And, he still kept... I didn't know... you know, there's a painting of Christ standing at a door knocking. And it's a famous painting. I'm sure everyone has seen it. And the artist was asked why there wasn't any knob on the door, you know. There was no knob on the door, and he said, the artist told the guy who asked the question, he said, "That's the door of the human heart. It can only be opened from the inside." And this guy had kept kicking on the door of my heart long enough for me to find out where the hell it was. It hurt sometimes to have the truth presented to me, but I'm grateful he did it. It was worth it all. Just to be here tonight and to hear what I've heard and to feel the presence that I feel in an AA meeting. And for the guy that's a new guy coming around, I would say latch a hold of this guy because when he, you know, there are important people to me. They send out the roots that go into the heart. And when they're uprooted and they're pulled out, they leave a hole. And I'm glad to be here tonight to get some of that hole filled in by being with Pat. And I don't know. I don't understand too much, but to be able to talk about it. But there's a lot of things I'd like to say. But I just can say tonight that I love this guy. And thanks a lot.
All right, Charlie, you're up next. I know you.
Cindy's first, isn't she?
Huh? No, I'll let Charles say something.
Okay.
Let everybody say something.
Well, I got here because of Father Ed. 22 years ago, he sobered up. When I was in high school, I remember I used to dread Father coming over because I knew he had a six-pack in his laundry. And before the laundry was done, he was done. And I used to wonder how I could get him to quit drinking. I made a bet with him once. He probably forgot. Still owes me $5. I didn't forget. Anyhow, you know how kids will do anything to help or try to get their parents to quit drinking or to quit smoking. That's a big thing now. But I used to make bets with him and try to get him on a diet or whatever. But it didn't work. And I was at a meeting, a prayer meeting Wednesday night. And we were thanking the Lord for, you know, the good things in our lives. And I knew I was coming here. And Father Ed's 22 years. Pat's 20 years. Tom's 11. My 6. My mom and dad's 4 or 5. And it's just, it's overwhelming. The gift that Alcoholics Anonymous has been for my family. None of us drink. All of us drank. And all of us got burned. And now all of us can say to one another, I love you. And mean it. And just to be able to say it is a gift. To hear my father say it, who probably never heard it said before his children got to AA. Same with my mother. But just to be able to say to them, to hear them say to me, to my brothers, I love you, it's a beautiful gift. AA is gift. A gift from the Father, given to all of his sons and daughters. The Spirit of God that I found here was a gift. I am an ungrateful, often ungrateful alcoholic. Tonight I am truly grateful and glad and honored and gifted in being here. And I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad God put me here to share this once in an eternity moment with Pat and his family and school chums, whom I used to fear. Everybody but King.
Take him, Bill, take him.
Pat, he was no nicer at home than he was on the street. Now it's different, and that's what's important. We continue to grow, and I continue to grow, and together we grow. And I have, I can tell a couple stories about Pat. I remember the night he didn't know his pants from his shirt. He was putting on a pair of pants. He buttoned them.
Long sleeve, huh?
Long sleeve, yeah. And lots of other things. But I have a gift here for Father Ed from this group. Chip, can I get a chance?
Yes, go ahead.
Father.
They don't have chips up in Illinois. So we got him one.
Good.
Tell you what, I'm going to lay some trump on you, Patrick.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to stand up like the rest. See? Pat and I, a few compartments, many moons. And we've been thrown out of some of the
nicer
places in the row.
The lower.
And the lower, too. Yeah, right. And, I didn't drink with Mike, and I don't know you as long as I knew Pat. And when you get to be a Hall of Famer like us phony somebody after about 20 years, we'll make all this fuss over you and it'll be great. But I knew Pat since I was 6 years old, maybe 5 years old. It's over 36 years, I believe. And to see him sitting here, sober as a judge, There ain't no way, like he says, that you can get from where we were to where we are. But here we are.
That's all I can say.
Hello. Happy birthday to you.